Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the part of my interesting conversational partner is being played by my good friend, John Selig. John's 12 years in sales was a well-paid internship for his career in stand-up comedy. Today, he trains sales teams to highlight their prospects' challenges through comedy writing, empowering them to be credible and memorable and to start more and have better conversations. John, how are you today?
I'm good. How about you, D-Fish?
As usual, I am living the dream, and I'm excited to have you on. We actually, I got a chance to be on the, I think it was one of the first, if not the first episodes of one of your shows. What was John Hates Sales But Loves Sales Experts? Well, yeah. I forget what the
That's exactly what it was called. And you were the first guest, and it was a little spontaneous the way we did it. It had been rolling around in my head for a while because I had just begun this my travels in visiting US cities to work with sales teams and do marketing events for one of my clients. And you know, all these people I'd connected with on LinkedIn were meeting up with me for food and for drink in a city that I didn't really know much about. And you had suggested that we go to the name of the bar is escaping me.
The Green Mill Lounge. That's right.
Correct. Yes. Thank you for filling that in for me. You suggested I get a real taste of Chicago and visit the Green Mill Lounge with you. And I just said, hey, let's get this new web series of mine going and let's just, you know, have a conversation about the venue we're in, the history, and then let's segue to something relating to sales. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, you got Chris Foreman, just one of the preeminent jazz organ players in the country, to do the Canadian national anthem.
I actually think that was out of his own volition. I don't think I coerced him in any way. But it was
probably
really
he'll play a lot of crazy things. So I can see that being his own idea.
I appreciate it nonetheless.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and speaking of bars and therefore beer, I do want to make sure I mention our sponsor today, which is Temperance Brewing right here in Evanston, Illinois. I am drinking their Oktoberfest Märzen style lager. Oh, I love Temperance. If you get a chance to check them out, they are actually, I know, distributed throughout Chicago. And I think they're starting to branch out into the Midwest and around the country. Really, really solid beers and great people. So thank you. A toast to Temperance for sponsoring us. I want to ask a question about sales, though, to you.
Uh-huh.
Why is it important that salespeople bring some humor and some comedy into their interactions with their customers?
Who says it's important?
Oh boy, now he's being funny. Look at that word. All right, so why do you think it's important?
Sure, I have my own theories. Of course, it's very controversial, the idea of having nice interpersonal relationships with your prospects. There are sales leaders who feel that prospects have no senses of humor, never want to laugh, and only care about business because that's what they care about. I call that projecting. But the reality is all of our prospects are regular people who, you know, have families, friends, stresses. You know, they're distracted by the volumes of emails that are, you know, landing on their phones, on their laptops, the number of texts that are popping up from both their professional contacts, their personal contacts, their family, their kids' teachers. Like, we're just being bombarded by all kinds of messaging, electronic, and of course verbal too, written, you know, all the possible ways to describe communication. There's just more of it than ever that's bombarding us, and it's really short-circuited our attention spans and our ability to focus. And we're also pretty disengaged with our jobs. Did I say that? I'm sorry if I already did, but.
No, you did not. Yeah.
No, 70% of Americans, according to a study that I can source for you and share with your audience.
Yeah, I'll throw in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. 70% of Americans over 35 are kind of disengaged with their jobs. They're phoning it in. It's a means to an end, right? And people are stressed. People have greater demands on them than ever before in order to meet shareholder expectations, management's expectations, the board's expectations, whoever. So if you factor in that the volume of info coming at us, the disengagement and the stress, our prospects, which we've already alluded to, who are people, can use a laugh in any interaction possible during the day. And sales reps have this glorious opportunity to get a smile out of their prospects so that they can, not be as on guard as they were when they receive a cold call or entering into a face-to-face meeting, and just have a more human interaction.
Well, it's interesting that the idea of just having a human interaction with another human being. I think it's really simple to kind of dehumanize our prospects and sometimes even our customers when they are just a name on our CRM list, right? Or just a task that pops up. So it's not even just the comedy aspect of it, but really just that idea of appealing to shared humanity. Does that make sense?
That absolutely does. I was at the Sales 3.0 conference in Vegas, and Gerhard Schwanter was talking, and he had a great sentence, which I've taken away. He says, your prospects and your customers aren't data points, they're people. And unfortunately, we're living in this era of big data, and everyone wants to, literally turn everything into some sort of sales experiment. And they're forgetting that ultimately all those emails that get read or, discarded, they're being sent to people. And people have emotions and their motivations for doing things. And salespeople need to remember that and package it up in a way that ultimately, as I like to say, triggers their prospects.
Right. And makes it to your point about customers and prospects being disengaged and being busy, just lets the person they're talking to kind of come back to themselves and have that human conversation, right? I mean, whether it's in sales, marketers, I think, do this all the time. A lot of us, we just think about, oh, I've got to send out this email. I have to make this call. I have to send out this LinkedIn connection request without thinking about the other person. They're just like, I have to do it for my job. But the moment you can kind of make, I love that idea of triggering, like you kind of just trigger them to like wake up for a moment and go, oh, I'm going to talk to John, right? I'm going to pay attention to him, and we're going to have a human conversation. And I think that's more than just a feel good thing. That actually creates better business results, right?
Yeah. And just to clarify one thing, I want to talk about the word trigger, because it's in the comedy world, it's sometimes, a bit of a dirty word, because comedians, in this day and age, comedians say things, whether they're ill-intended or not, there's just words buried into what they're delivering. And some people clam up, don't want to hear it, get angry, and they've been triggered. However, in sales, those things that make our prospects angry are the problems they're struggling with, which we hopefully can solve for them. So if we can bury a problem we think they struggle with into some humor, it's going to create that emotional response, because prospects will go, geez, we're struggling with that right now. How'd you know? That's funny because it's true. Wow. How can I help you? And if we can trigger our prospects to start opening up about the things that impact them on a day-to-day basis, which we can help them with, it's just a great and natural way to start a conversation.
I like that. So as you were speaking, I just realized that one of the things that a lot of us in the sales training world, sales coaching world, we often talk about finding a person's pain point, a prospect's pain point, so that we can help solve that. Most people don't like addressing pain, right? Nobody wants to go, this is something that I don't like. It hurts. Let's talk about it. So you're right. They get defensive. They clam up. And so the idea of using humor, or really just any kind of human engagement to let them be comfortable sharing that pain, that can be really powerful. I think that's really insightful. Well done. Well done, John.
Thank you. You can applaud now if you want.
Yeah.
Oh, that was more like a roaring crowd. I'll take that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you mentioned comedy there for a moment. I know that you are a stand-up. You've done that for a while. Kind of a bit of a tangent, but what did you learn as a stand-up, or what skills did you have to develop as a stand-up that you're kind of able to bring to the sales world? And you know, like what have you learned that has use in selling these days?
Yeah, I think brevity is really the big one that I've learned from stand-up. I, to be quite frank, I sold for quite a while, and I was doing everything from cold calling to inside sales to field sales, mainly in the enterprise tech space. And I feel that I learned that there was a lot that sales taught me that served me well in stand-up. But when I think where do we even begin? I mean, this is kind of what I talk about when I work with sales teams. You know, it's more about the audience. It's never about you. It's important to understand your audience and be able to read them. You know, it's different in sales than it is in stand-up. But when I'm performing stand-up, and let's say I'm up, the other night I was on a show and I was up 6 out of 7.
Okay.
So that gave me a lot of time to sort of watch the crowd, watch the other comics and what they were saying and how the crowd was reacting.
Okay.
And I was able to, I guess, jettison a joke I was going to do because I was like, that's not going to work.
Ah, gotcha.
And replace it with something else. In other words, my jokes are my products. And if the audience has no interest, if I feel the audience has no interest in buying my products, I won't open my, you know, coat and show them all the watches on the inside of my coat.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's
okay.
Yeah. Also think, you know, we have to be resilient in both sales and stand-up. I have a joke, you know, doesn't matter if you're in sales or stand-up, if you want to succeed in either, you just need passion for failure because it just comes up so much the two. And if you're just going to, you know, wilt when you fail, you won't last in either.
Right. You definitely did choose two endeavors that we're just going to like really challenge your self-concept.
Absolutely.
You have a glutton for punishment, I think.
Well, to be honest, I didn't choose, I fell into stand-up in a really strange way. I was just looking for a creative outlet. I heard about a comedy writing class and I thought I'd meet some people and maybe we create some fun YouTube videos or sketches. And when I arrived and I had paid the money, I found out it was a stand-up class and the teacher.
So now you're learning stand-up.
Well, yeah, but it's like, you know, the teacher said at the end of these 10 weeks, you're going to do 5 minutes of stand-up for your friends and family. And my response to that was, no, I am not. But every week we had some homework, shall we say, and I had to get up in front of my peers and sort of read my homework. And I realized this is way easier than some sales meetings I've had where I'm presenting to, you know, 3 or 4 middle-aged people whose arms are folded and don't want to be there. And think that, like, what can I tell them? I'm younger than them. What do I know? But by the end of it, you know, I have them more engaged. And I always found that was way harder than getting on stage and bombing with some stupid jokes. Because, you know, in stand-up, if you bomb, you lose your dignity. But in sales, if you bomb, you lose your job. So the
very true, very true.
So the stakes are so much higher in sales. Stand up, but you know, I know it's terrifying for some people. It didn't faze me. Of course, I get nervous and I don't want to fail, and I have all those regular emotions every time I do it. But it's meaningless. It's just one set, and no one remembers you. You know, it's not like they're paying. I'm not a comedian that they're paying $100 for a full theater. Sure. And if I bomb for 90 minutes, everyone's going to be angry. I'm just a guy on a bar show, you know, or on a pro-am show at a club. You know, I don't tour around with my stand-up. I just do it on a regular basis. So the other thing I can tell you that I learned from it is it's very much they're both numbers games. So there's a funnel approach to both hitting your numbers in sales and stand-up. Obviously in sales, we need to find X amount of leads through X amount of activities. some of those leads, we qualify them and their deals. And then some of those deals we win, some we lose, and maybe we hit our number, maybe we don't. And in stand-up, it's kind of the same. Everything funny that pops in my head, that I think can work on stage is a lead. And then I have to determine how much time I'm going to invest in this lead to try and make it funny. And there's an opportunity cost to that at every step of the writing process. So,
right.
So let's say I decide, you know, I think having, you know, sales podcasts are a funny premise, and I think I can work that in something. That means I have to spend time, you know, expressing myself around that topic, whether it's documenting it all in a Word document or a pad, or just babbling into my smartphone, recording it. I have to go listen to it. I have to like trim the fat and edit it. I have to practice it. And then I have to bring it to stage. I have to fail with it. I like to record all my sets. So I have to watch. And that's just one joke or premise, right? So,
right.
You know, I could think of 100 things. I don't have time to work on all those 100 things. So I have to choose judiciously, and I have to invest time in the few that I really believe in, given the amount of stage time that I have in a particular week, and try and prep those for a bit of a bigger show where I'm being paid or where it's a larger crowd. So it's all very much a numbers game. And when I get a joke that's working, you know, let's say by the fourth time, it's hitting consistently for the fourth, fifth, and sixth time, I'm like, okay, I have a joke that's like a closed deal.
Right. And then you keep that one, and then you got to, you know, write another one and keep building it up. And I think it's really interesting as well, this idea that, and I've always been a big fan of stand-up. I've never done it myself. I've done a lot of improv, but no stand-up. But one thing in talking with comedians and realizing that it is a process, and that, you know, you just don't show up with a fully developed set. It's something that takes a lot of crafting and effort and failing and trying it out. I've actually had a chance to be in the audience when comedians are kind of running their I don't know how you even say it, kind of like a test set, where they're like, I'm going to talk for 50 minutes and record and see what you guys think is funny. I think there's something that salespeople could learn from that, right? This idea that you got to continually hone and practice. It's not even the numbers game of your prospects, but also the kind of the honing of your message and of your craft, and continuing to evolve and develop how you're reaching out and talking to people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And an advantage that modern sales reps have is there's recording technologies today for both reps and managers to sit down with the recordings after a long day of frustration and try and pick apart where did the sales rep go wrong or right with their prospect. And yeah, it needs to become, we need to find something that works, that pushes the right buttons, that is short and that delivers all the value that the prospect needs to hear, or at least you know, the right questions which push the right buttons and get them talking. And that's trial and error, and it definitely takes practice. We don't call up our most, you know, sought after prospect the first call we ever make in a sales job. We take some time to fail a little bit with some low stakes prospects, and I do that with comedy. I go to a bunch of open mics that don't matter, and then, you know, after I've
right. I've seen some of those, not yours, but I've been to some of those open mics.
Yeah, and you know what? I think when I in my training and workshop, I talk about what can salespeople, and I don't have it in front of me, so don't grill me, but what can salespeople learn from great comedians, but more importantly, from the really bad ones?
Oh, interesting. What are some of the highlights of that?
Oh, I specifically said don't grill me, but we'll talk about them as best I can.
just one or two. You don't have to tell me them all.
Yeah. We talked about reading the audience and knowing your audience. And like I said, very often new comedians, they only have like X amount of jokes, and they can't shift gears if the audience, they probably can't read the room to begin with, but they don't have the material to shift gears, even if they can read the room. The other one is, I just had it on the tip of my tongue.
I was going to throw one in there. So not one of yours, but something that I learned actually in on the improv stage, but something that I've pulled into a lot of my business. So in improv, they have the idea of yes and, right? Which I'm sure you're familiar with, where you don't, if you're doing a scene with somebody, you don't dismiss what they're saying and replace. You don't go, no, that's not a car, that's a plane, and then do your own idea. Like that was, because that's what bad improv comedians do. Good ones look at it as a collaborative process. So something for me was taking that idea into my conversations with prospects, with clients, and said, you know, they'd say something, and instead of me going, oh no, that's wrong, you know, okay, yeah. And here's, you know, even if they were wrong, not shutting them down, but rather using it to move to another place. Because nobody wants to be told that they're wrong. That's the best way of getting somebody to stop listening to you. But anyways,
sure.
What was the one that popped up in your mind?
So I alluded to it earlier, but I watch new comedians tell stories that they think are funny, and they don't know how to write jokes. And jokes can be buried into stories. But the idea is in stand-up, you really shouldn't go more than 15 to 20 seconds without getting a laugh from the audience. Mm. And I watch new comedians tell a story that goes like 90 seconds, and they think it's really funny because it happened to them and their friends. And it's just, there's no jokes in there. The crowd wasn't there. There's no context for it. And the crowd's faces are lighting up, but not because they're enjoying the story. It's because they're on their phones.
Right.
They just get super bored, and you know, new comedians can ramble for long periods of time. And our, like I said, our attention spans are really short, and you need to keep hooking people in. So I feel sales reps can have those same bad habits.
Oh, for sure. Well, that idea of being a good storyteller, I think that just like many people who are trying out stand-up comedy, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going into sales that they've been told they're good storytellers or they're good talkers, right? And they go, oh, because of that, I'm going to be successful. Where people don't want to just listen to somebody talk unless, as you said, every 15 or 20 seconds there's humor. You know, watching a good stand-up comedian, yes, they might be a long-form storyteller, but to your point, there is those beats, right? They have the jokes within the story. And so even if you're a salesperson, right, you've got to make sure that you're having the longer story you're telling about your product or service, those little beats where you're kind of reinforcing why it's important to the prospect, right? Why it's going to solve their challenges, or even asking questions. Hey, are you engaged with me right now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's it can never be about the comedian or the salesperson. It really has to be about the audience, or in the case of sales, the micro audience, as I call it.
Right. The person who you're talking to one-on-one right there.
Correct.
So do you see that the sales world, that people are figuring out more of this humanity, or do you, cause one thing I see a lot is this move towards technology, and especially in the sales and marketing world, it's what's your sales and marketing stack? What are all the different platforms that you're using? Do you see people starting to realize that we've got to bring some humanity back into this?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, like every other social network, LinkedIn, where I spend a lot of time, is a bit of a bubble. And yeah, there's voices who are quite loud and say, we need to bring humanity back. So you hear it from them. But then when I speak with a lot of sales leaders, you can tell they're struggling with how to do it, because the sales leader, no matter what level they are, they have someone above them who's got pressure on them. And the founder has pressure upon them. Because the investor wants their money back. They're very nostalgic. After 3 or 4 years, they'd love to be reunited with their long-lost money. And that pressure just trickles all the way down from the founder to the management to the rep to the prospect. And it's all kind of artificial. Like, you know, everyone's working on some artificial timeline because someone, you know, that's their business model, to get their money back in 4 years. Or whatever it is, whatever that horizon is.
Or you have your quota for this quarter, so you got to close this deal now.
Correct. But those quarterly deadlines and targets are based on ultimately some 3 or 4 year profit.
Right. Goal. Yep.
And so if we look back, you know, in history, you know, some guy or girl who had a business once upon a time, they weren't beholden to anybody. They were just trying to make their business profitable for the long term. And they weren't driven by anything artificial. They were just trying to do what's best, hopefully for the customers. And doing things on, at least the successful ones, I think, were doing it on the customer's timeline versus theirs.
Right.
So I think that's where humanity played a big role in things. And the moment you start putting artificial deadlines that are meaningless to prospects and to customers, you know, that's when behavior starts to change and becomes a little less human, and you know, more spammy and more volume, more metrics to measure, because we're just trying to like work backwards.
Right. No, yeah. So that's interesting, because I see that as well. There's definitely kind of the I mean, heck, I'll put myself in this category as well. The authors, the speakers, the people who hang around LinkedIn all the time talking about this humanity. But a lot of times when I go actually talk to clients and work in their organizations, there is that pressure. And it's, you either need to have an organization that somebody in the organization at a high level gets that putting these artificial pressures on doesn't lead to great results, or you just have somebody within the organization, even if it's a sales manager or a VP of sales, who's smart enough to go, hey, I want to get good results. The way is through humanizing the sales process, and they can provide some air cover, right? They can kind of take some of the pressure off. But I do see that a lot of organizations are struggling because they keep trying to sell on their, to your point, on their calendar versus the customers. And right now the customers have a lot more power than they ever did before. So if we don't evolve as sales organizations, we're in trouble.
I agree. And what's interesting about this day and age is we don't need to go back to the days of door-to-door sales. You know, there's a reason why we moved away from that model. There's some really good technology out there that allows sales teams to get the message out there. And it can be done in a human, personal way. It doesn't mean the volume necessarily has to be tamped down. But if, for example, you know, you're reaching out to 200 vice presidents of manufacturing to talk to them about a niche part of their process, which you can help them with, and you have a great joke about why that process is broken for a lot of companies or how it's hurting their business, you're bringing humanity to them in a way that they think is super personal. And at the same time, the technology is enabling you to touch more prospects in that human way. So we have all these technologies and tools, and it's all a matter of like, how can we use them to A, get the word out for ourselves, but also do it in a way that makes us seem like humans.
Right. So using technology truly as a tool. And so instead of, and using it to personalize versus dehumanize your engagement with the prospect. Hopefully, you know, some people are getting the message, and if the ones that aren't, well, they'll struggle. But one of the things that makes things better, if you're struggling, is beer. I wanted to make sure we had at least a minute to talk about this, because we could talk about comedy and sales for a long time. You're north of the border in the great white north. What beers are you drinking up there? What's you got any good Canadian beers you can share with me?
Yeah, my absolute favorite beer, maybe even on earth, is something called Bose, BEAU apostrophe S, Bose Lug Tread Ale. And it's like,
I already love the name.
Yeah, and it's so the brewery is Bose. They're located near Ottawa, and okay. It's like, I think a lagered ale is how they characterize it. It's 5.2% alcohol. It's crisp. It's clean. It's delicious. If you like IPAs, this is not the beer for you. This is what I call real beer, and it's just delicious.
Wait, I would like everybody to know that I did not say that about IPAs.
I'll take ownership and responsibility for that. That's fine.
Okay. Well, I'm not a big IPA fan either, but I'm usually the one messing with IPAs. All right. That's so, okay. So, Bose. All right.
I might have triggered a good portion of your audience.
that's hey, you know, as I say this frequently, there's nothing wrong with having opinions, but in the end, whatever you drink and that you enjoy, more power to you. So if that's an IPA, if that's a triple IPA, if that's an imperial stout, or even like I was talking with my friend Ryan on the show once, and he brought up sours. Well, but you know, if that's what floats your boat, that's what floats your boat. Okay, so Bo, so we're gonna have to check that one out. Is anything else up there that I should check out? Anything else you want to throw in there?
There's an American beer I want to talk about. When I was in Arizona, I had the pleasure of drinking Kilt Lifter. And I think they sell it. When I was in Vegas, I saw it there too. So it's clearly not just in Phoenix, but it's obviously kind of regional. It's like a malty, darker beer that's got a little bit of sweetness, but is ultimately really crisp. And it's the kind of beer I could pass out on. Yeah.
So make sure you don't pass out if you're wearing a kilt.
Correct. Yeah. Or just don't wear a kilt when you're drinking it.
Fair enough. Just put on a pair of pants and then go to town. Yeah. All right. Well, with a name like Kilt Lifter, I think that's probably a good place for us to wrap up before we get into even more dangerous territory. John, every time we finish up a conversation, I always ask my guest, what's one piece of advice you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
There's two pieces of advice, and considering what I do, you won't be surprised. Number one is try and bring a smile to someone's face. We actually have a morning man here who says that at the end of his morning show every morning. I said the word morning several times now. That's awkward. But he always gives that advice. Try and make someone smile today. And so I think that's a great thing because it challenges us to be likable and people love it when you can make them smile or laugh. The other bit of advice, and it's kind of similar, if you can't make someone laugh, it probably means maybe things are going on with you. So figure out how to laugh. So whether it's hanging out with people whose company you appreciate, whether it's watching something fun on Netflix or going to a movie or go to a live stand-up show or go to improv. There's a million ways that we can be entertained, and there's so many people who could put smiles on our faces or productions, and just try and laugh more than you already do.
Love it. If you think everybody's being cranky, more than likely you're actually the cranky one in the situation. So
I agree. Yeah.
Fix that. Fantastic. Well, John, thanks so much for joining me today. If somebody wanted to follow up and get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Easiest spot is my website, johnselig.com, J-O-N, no H, J-O-N-S-E-L-I-G.com.
Perfect. And we'll be sure to put all the show notes, or all the links, excuse me, in the show notes. Throughout our conversation, I have completely finished my Temperance Beer Company Oktoberfest. It was delightful. It was delicious. Thank you to Temperance. You can find them in their tap room in Evanston, Illinois, but also throughout the Chicagoland area and even into the Midwest as well. Very, very delicious beers they have. I highly recommend. And everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Beer Beats in Business. Metaphorically, we will see you next time for the next episode. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business podcast.